Okay, right now in the studio we have Ted Wired, who is a clinical therapist and certified grief counselor, and he's here at the behest of Braveheart Volunteers. And we have Zachary Desmond, Director of Programs at Braveheart Volunteers. And thank you for coming. Now, you're here because of a workshop that you're doing tomorrow, right, at Chickaquanakahiti? Is that correct?
That's right. Zach invited me up to be able to give a workshop and talk about grief and loss and emotional healing from those different losses.
How do you become a grief counselor?
That's a good question. Usually it's not something you go out and strive for.
Yeah, that's gotta be emotionally tough on you.
Actually, if someone has done their work, it means you get to hold someone's story but not have it absorb into you.
Yeah.
And I think you get that idea from your own work.
We were talking a little bit earlier about my work in post-conflict situations. I think you're right there.
Yeah.
So basically, you get to hold someone's grief without absorbing it.
Yes, and I always think of having our hands out in front. Our arms are connected to our heart, but we get to hold their story rather than hijack it, steal it, or have it become our own story. And that way, everyone gets to be seen, heard, and valued, which is where the healing lives when there's a loss.
I've been curious about what's happened in Sitka recently. Before IFQs, and whether or not you like IFQs or not, before IFQs, we used to lose boatloads of people on the seas. And it was a terrible thing for Sitka. We built the Mariner's Wall to commemorate people, friends and neighbors who were lost at sea. And yet, through all that, I've never seen a response like this one with the slide, which took out three friends. But it's a very different type of response. Why is that?
It's interesting. My brother's name, his plaque is at Seafarer's Memorial up in Homer, where he died on a shipwreck. So I get that piece. There's a certain part when a tragedy like this happens, that's just happened in this community, where the illusion of safety is shattered.
Mm.
And this wasn't something that you could have anticipatory loss with, anticipatory grief. Seafarers, you know, there's a certain piece of this might happen. When something happens that's so sudden and not expected, it shatters a community so deeply because our illusion of safety just disintegrates.
What other communities have you worked with?
This week I've been up in Homer, up in Anchorage, and then in Sitka. I actually live in Taos, New Mexico, where we do work all over northern New Mexico. Luckily, I get to fly around and talk on different issues with addiction as well as grief and loss. They go hand in hand. And it just happened that Zach had set up this talk, and it happens
before
to
this
be
happened.
Now, before this happened.
Ah. And so you were going to do training for Braveheart Volunteers, and all of a sudden you're doing work with the whole community.
Which is beautiful. It's what I get to do quite often in the Southwest. And to be up here and happen to have a very sad story, but be here at this time and be so open is such a... I'm humbled and grateful that I get to be here and maybe help out a little bit.
Now, Sitka had, as you said, something that was unexpected, a slide that killed three people and destroyed a few homes. What happens when you get to a place like Oso, Washington, which lost something like 120 people and took out a whole larger neighborhood? Is people's response much different to a larger crisis, or is it more difficult with a smaller crisis where you knew personally who was affected?
It's interesting. It can be difficult and more difficult. In a town like this, you have these three community members that were well known. I saw the piece of art on the hallway as I walked up the stairs to here. And so the whole community gets to come together and work, hopefully, and this town is definitely doing that right now, work together. And there's that piece of actually gathering, which as human beings, that's where our healing happens, is gathering rather than isolating. When you have a large disruption or many deaths, usually you have micro communities within that larger story. So the same thing might be happening, but it's with certain families and pieces like this. When my brother died up in Homer, you know, it made national news. And a big piece that happened is those families came together as that community, as well, of course, as Homer in Alaska and Taos in New Mexico. And so there were subcategories, I guess you could say, of that bigger picture, making up the communities so that people still felt metaphorically held.
Ted, if people come to your workshop tomorrow at 6:30, what can they expect?
The most beautiful thing is there was movement, meaning they actually came, and I came, meaning there was some sort of action, which is what our psyche needs. My hope is that they get permission to realize that they can connect, they can have permission to grieve, and have that intellectual finger hold or foothold or hand hold that allows our brain to calm down enough so we can drop into our emotions and realize it's a natural, normal healing process.
You know, Zachary, what, you know, Braveheart has been doing other things as well. Can you talk a little bit about Braveheart's role during this whole situation?
Absolutely. We're in an interesting position in the community because we do provide grief support in a number of sort of structured venues. We have our therapeutic program director, Aaron Mathis, has been running a grief support group that is 8 weeks for individuals who have lost a loved one in any number of situations. There's the quarterly spousal bereavement retreat that she's run out at Stargavin Cabin. So this is different in that what we found as an organization is that kind of what Ted was saying is that people were reaching out to us, even given all the resources that the community has you know, both at Search and at SCAPS, or sorry, at SICA Counseling and Prevention Services and Youth Advocates of SICA. Everybody has really made their resources available so that people know that they have somebody to talk to. But we were getting calls, not seeking counsel so much as just wanting to act, wanting to know how to connect. How do I volunteer? How do I donate to make this possible? You mentioned the huge amount of support that came out, and people were finding, in our experience, that you know the bases were covered. That doesn't mean that we still don't want to act. That doesn't mean we still that there isn't that desire to come together. So last week we were able to hold a space where the community could come and just stand in solidarity and
that
stand.
That was the vigil at Totem Square.
Yeah, and you know, I think it was an opportunity for just for individuals and families to come and see each other and to know you're here and I'm here and we're all our thoughts. And our hearts are with the people who at that time were still missing. So this is, I think, after the memorials last weekend, this is another step toward, as Ted said, I mean, grounding ourselves and figuring out, okay, where are we now? And what do we need to do as a community now?
One of the things that I've noticed is people no longer feel secure. If they live on a hillside, they're really nervous. At least some of them are really nervous. Can this help with that too?
It can definitely help. What happens is when we lose that feeling of safety, which loss does to us, especially sudden loss, is we reintegrate and we actually build a certain level of insulation of denial. Every time we go out and start our car, we're actually putting a spark on gasoline to make that engine go around, and we feel secure. And so when this happens, all that safety gets shattered. And in the midst of that shattering, then it's actually reintegrating back into society. So slowly, over time, hopefully with some more discernment, not meaning the situation, but just in our life, we can be more conscious and we step back into the world with certain levels of denial.
With certain levels of denial? Can you pursue that, please?
Denial can actually be a good thing. Yes, it can.
Okay.
It can lead to a lot of difficult issues, but we do have a certain level. I planned from yesterday to hike about 15 miles, get on an airplane, and get here. That's a lot of insulation of all the things that could have happened, and luckily I'm here. But it allows us that chance to step into the world rather than just being afraid of the world. When something like this happens and we're shattered, destruction leads to chaos that gives us the chance for transforming that loss into something new. In the midst of that chaos, emotionally, we're very young and afraid. We've lost a level of innocence called this whole world is safe.
It's interesting, though, because you talk about denial. I've always thought that people overstress danger rather than understress. Like, I've walked away from an airplane crash, and yet, you know, and I found myself overstressing the danger of flying on airplanes. Rationally, I had to bring myself around to believing that that flying in an airplane was actually safer than getting in my car.
Exactly.
And so instead of denial, I'm thinking I'm trying to bring myself back to, you know, reality. But you phrased just the flip side of that, which is kind of the same thing.
It is. That level of insulation allows us to be here right now. Mm. And hopefully in that we can be more conscious so that we can have I have so much gratitude of being able to look out of my hotel room, see this beautiful place, see where my stepfather actually was in the early 60s and then told us stories. So it was a fantasy place, and I'm actually here. And also find ways to be cautious and have a level of insulation that I'm safe enough to do this world.
Zach, what do you want to tell us more about what Braveheart is going to be doing in the future on this?
You know, it's one of the opportunities that we have with this event tomorrow and with these more inclusive and wider group gatherings, we're developing a conversation that is hopefully, you know, that's what we want to be able to. We want to be able to have a conversation with the community to be able to really for us discern. Yeah, what is next? What makes sense? Because we have our plans, and then life happens. And now we are in this new relationship with each other in the community. You know, we'll continue to do grief and bereavement support groups. We just, it's important, I think, for us to take into account what does the community need, and we need to be in conversation in order for that to happen. So to be determined is my answer.
Okay. Ted, I have one other question for you. How is it different counseling a family who's suffered a loss when that loss is very public, like this one has, as opposed to when the loss is private?
It can be very different. There's a lot of people who step out to help when a loss is... My two daughters and mother-in-law died in a car crash, and so it was very, very public, 3,000 people at the memorial, and my house was inundated, and trying to find a healthy insulation and all these people saying, how can I help, how can I help, how can I help, can become a job in itself. So sometimes working with a very public loss means you're also working with the family on their own self-care of how do they also have enough space to breathe and do their own personal work. When something is very individualized and not public, you can have almost the opposite effect where there's such a high level of isolation that there's no connection and there's not that permission. So finding that in between connecting and being overwhelmed is a difficult piece. And so hopefully I get to help people navigate that a little bit.
Are you still going to go ahead with the training that you had originally planned before this, or is this supplanted?
We will go ahead with the training. It's an important part of, and actually, truthfully, I think it's more important than ever. It's called Stewards of Grief, and it's Encountering Grief for Behavioral Health Professionals, and we're doing that tomorrow as well. So it's going to be a big day for Ted.
But, yeah.
But we are doing that as well, and we have plenty of people from around the community who have actually signed up to participate in that, and I wish I could say that there was space left and that everybody could come. But if the room is pretty packed right now, but if you're especially interested, or if you have any questions about tomorrow night, feel free to give us a call at 747-4600, and we can give you some more information over at Braveheart Volunteers.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, you can pull me up at goldenwillowretreat.org. And one of the things we do there, that's goldenwillowretreat.org. And one of the things we do there is people will ask me questions, and I'll actually write an article or just answer their question to them, because we want people to be able to reach out. And so just like the amazing work Zach's doing up here, we want people, wherever it feels safe, to be able to ask a question, no matter what the question is, because emotions don't have to make sense. Our brain wants to make sense. Our emotions don't. To have a place to be able to put that out there is huge. So I'm just so grateful to be here.
Ted Wired and Zach Desmond, thank you very much for being here. That is going to be at 6:30 tomorrow, the event at the Shitkaquan Nakahiti. Is that correct?
Correct.
And is there any admission charge or anything like that?
No, absolutely free to the public, and refreshments will be provided. So please join us.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being my guest on the Good Day Radio Show.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.